Case number 21-1029, USA versus Shondell Pritchett. Oral argument, 15 minutes per side. Mr. Nelson for the appellant.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Paul Nelson on behalf of Shondell Pritchett, and I've requested 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
Mr. Pritchett received a 57-month sentence on an advisory range of 57 to 71 that included a four-level enhancement under Section 2K2.1B6B for possessing a gun in connection with another felony offense. As the district court recognized, without that enhancement, his guideline range would have been 37 to 46, and the district court did say that if on appeal that a decision was reversed, that the 57-month sentence would not be reimposed. Now, application note 14B to section 2K2.1 indicates that the other offense in a situation like this must be drug trafficking. And that was something this court in the U.S. versus Shields in 2011 had indicated. Here, the district court concluded that the small amount of ecstasy found in the jacket pocket in the closet in a coat near the coat where the gun was found reflected trafficking in ecstasy. And in reaching that conclusion, the district court indicated that it relied on two exhibits made by the government during the sentencing, which were text messages that the government asserted showed that he was involved in trafficking of ecstasy. But it's our position that the conclusion was clearly erroneous, that the mere proximity, as the court noted again in Shields, is not sufficient to establish that this should apply. The government exhibits, the main reason that the government exhibits were not sufficient was that both exhibits predated the time frame during which Mr. Pritchett was charged with possessing this firearm.
Are you advocating a categorical rule that any evidence that predates, I mean, that can't be the rule, right? Just because the evidence predates the discovery in the home, it can't be considered? Or are you saying there's like a timing element to it, if it's 3 months old or 6 months old? Or,
well, I think that that's a legitimate factor to consider in terms of the weight of the evidence.
Well, how do you frame the consideration? What's the test we should apply, or how do you frame the consideration for us?
Well, I think I guess I would certainly argue that the first exhibit that the government pointed to, the text message, which did apparently deal with the alleged sale of ecstasy, was on May 30 of 2019, which was 6 months in advance of the time that the gun allegedly was possessed by Mr. Pritchett. And I think that definitely, I guess my situation would be, I'd say that it may be difficult to draw the line, but I would say that 6 months in advance of possession of the gun would be on the side of the line that is not relevant to show that he was trafficking at the time he possessed the gun.
What about 2 months?
Pardon?
What about 2 months? Wasn't there text messages in September too?
It depends on the weight of the evidence. I think the September text message, in fact, even the government said in its sentencing memorandum, it referred to that as a text message presumably about the sale of ecstasy, and so that it was not definitive that in fact dealt with the sale of ecstasy.
When we have the six-month message and the two-month message, taking those together, doesn't that give them extra heft? It's just hard because there may well be some pre-existing evidence, some earlier evidence. And if it was 3 years older, that would be more convincing to me. But I'm just not sure, you know, what, maybe it's just some balancing test or something you want us to apply.
Well, I think that it's not just those factors. It's not just the timing of those text messages that's involved here. I think there's other evidence in the record that contradicts the finding that he was trafficking in ecstasy at the time.
But isn't there a problem with the September text where he says, "I don't take pills, I'm just the middle person"?
That, number one, assuming that he's talking about ecstasy, which is what Judge Maloney interpreted that to mean that they were talking about ecstasy, but it's not clear. And again, the government said that presumably was a text message about ecstasy.
But the pill that was found in the jacket, was that an ecstasy pill?
Yes. There were several ecstasy pills. Based on the weight in the police reports, it appears that there were perhaps 6 or 8 ecstasy pills in the jacket pocket at the time. Now, one of the things that is one of the facts in the record that does support Mr. Pritchett's statement that's reflected in the PSR in paragraph 24 that he used ecstasy regularly is when the house was searched, that the police indicated that the police officer who submitted the affidavit in support of the criminal complaint here, search said that they found what were referred to as quote-unquote meth foils, which were described as pieces of tin foil with recent burn marks that is evidence of ecstasy being smoked. And that evidence that was contemporaneous with the finding of the gun does show that the ecstasy, the likelihood of the ecstasy in the gun found in the house was to be used there, not to be sold. In addition, the records of this case show that during the entire time, and to put things in context, the indictment charges Mr. Pritchett with possessing the gun starting on or about September 20, and that was the date when there was a text message, I believe it was a text message that had photographs of two pistols that Mr. Pritchett was trying to sell. There was a black one and a pink one, and apparently the transactions that showed around that time that he was able to sell the pink pistol, but apparently he was still trying to sell the other pistol at the same time.
Is it if you're trying to sell a pistol, is it odd to keep it loaded in your jacket pocket and in the closet?
I have long given up, Your Honor, on trying to rationalize things that the people I represent do. I don't know that it's, in my experience and what I've seen, I don't think it's unusual that a gun would be kept and would be loaded. Say again, I'm not a gun person.
Nor am I. I guess we have fact findings from Judge Maloney that we would have to say are clearly erroneous on these fronts, right?
I understand that. And I don't think Judge Maloney particularly relied on the fact that the gun was loaded. That Judge Maloney's analysis appeared to be totally based on the fact that these two prior text messages showed that he was trafficking in ecstasy.
And the standard that the district judge is to apply is by a preponderance of the evidence, is that
yes.
Right?
And again, and just in this court's decisions in the Jackson case that we cited and also in United States versus Seymour, talked about that in terms of presence of a firearm, that it's, as the court said, could hardly have emboldened a drug possession or be able to protect a modest stash while they're trying to sell the gun at the same time, that would be protecting the policy or the rationale behind possession of the gun is sort of undercut if the gun is trying to be sold at the time. And again, during this period, that there was no indication of actual trafficking in ecstasy, that this case came about based on an informant giving information that Mr. Pritchett was going to Chicago and buying heroin to return to the Kalamazoo area and sell that there was no discussion at all. The government was not looking, or the police at the time, local police were not looking into any sort of ecstasy distribution.
Does it matter whether he was trying, whether he was dealing in ecstasy versus some other drug like heroin?
Well, I think at the time, based on the rationale, again, I think that undercuts the rationale by the district court here, that the district court's decision was based solely on the fact that he was trafficking ecstasy, that there was a small amount of ecstasy found in the other jacket pocket. And there's
so, in other words, if we thought there wasn't enough evidence of ecstasy trafficking, we would have to send it back, but the district court could then decide whether there was evidence of trafficking heroin. Is that correct?
I suppose that's a possibility. I'm not sure that there's any indication in the record and the police reports that there was any trafficking of heroin at that time. And again, it appears when he was stopped in January, again, this is a situation where he was stopped. He did have heroin in the car when he was stopped. But again, that there was no, he didn't have a gun. And that was a situation where if the fortress theory was to be applied, where he would have the gun to protect a large amount of drugs or during facilitate drug transactions, traveling from, I don't want to demean Chicago, but as far as I understood it, it wasn't a very, it was not one of the best areas of Chicago that he was traveling to buy heroin and bring that back, but he didn't have a gun. And I know the police report indicated that they searched the car, and initially they thought he made some sort of furtive gesture that they thought he might have had a gun, but they didn't find a gun in the car. And again, that there's no evidence in the record that he did any drug trafficking out of this house. And finally, I would point out that based on the facts of this case, that neither the state police, the state authorities, nor the federal government charged him with trafficking in ecstasy. In both situations, he was simply charged with simple possession of ecstasy. And so, although the fact that, as the government pointed out, that the that uncharged conduct could be the basis of this, that it would seem to me that if neither governmental authority thought he was actually trafficking in ecstasy, that certainly shows that is inconsistent with Judge Maloney's conclusion here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Catherine Delzell on behalf of the United States. I, of course, want to address the main arguments here, but I do want to take a brief second to, I think, quickly dispense with the confusion over whether he was trying to sell the Glock that is at issue in this case. There are two texts that show unequivocally that he was not. One is the text with the person named Brandon. It was from October 25th. The record site is R46 Exhibit 1. And in that, Pritchett asks Brandon if he wants this pole, like the gun. Brandon says he's looking to find a Glock, and and Pritchett says, and I'm quoting, "I'm in love with them hoes. I won't let them go." It's spelled a little shorthand, but that's the gist of what he says. So the text is clear that he won't let his Glock go. He later sends Brandon a picture of the pink gun only in isolation, and he says that is the one that's for sale. In another text message, this is the one October 21st with Query Kaka. This record site is R48, Exhibit 3A, page ID 643. Pritchett, again, clearly offers the pink gun for sale in exchange for a zip, which is an ounce quantity of drugs. Pritchett says, "Do you want this pole?" He says, specifically, "Pink one, it's a nine, $225. Give me a zip for the pink one." So I just wanted to get that out of the way very briefly. He was not trying to sell this gun, and in fact, he specifically wanted to keep it. Getting back to the main arguments, I want to make two main points. One, I think that an easy route to decide this case is that the gun was found in very close proximity to the ecstasy. It was actually, to clarify, the pills were a mix of MDMA and methamphetamine, apparently shaped like a Transformers logo. So the gun was found very close to both those pills and a digital scale. So I think that's an easy way for this court to resolve this case. But I also want to step back and zoom out a little to get the bigger picture, which, as Judge Moore, you kind of indicated, he was undoubtedly distributing heroin and other drugs during this period. And this is before, during, and after the time period when we knew he had the Glock. So there's just abundant evidence that he was drug trafficking.
But the district judge finds him trafficking ecstasy. So if we were to say that there was not a preponderance of the evidence, it was a clear error vis-a-vis the ecstasy, would we not have to send it back for further fact-finding by the district judge?
I don't think so. first of all, I disagree that it's clear error, of course. But this court can affirm for any reason supported by the record. And I think there were findings here and, in fact, admissions by Mr. Pritchett that, again, he pled guilty to count three, which is possession with intent to distribute heroin. And there's abundant evidence that he had heroin during the relevant time period when he had the Glock. Again, you know.
But the Glock is not seen in the presence of the heroin.
That's
or
true.
In terms of dealing with the heroin. The Glock is in a coat pocket, right, in the closet.
That's true. There were two separate searches. The first is when they found the Glock in the coat closet. The second is when he was returning from Chicago with a haul of heroin. And I think it's important to note that by that point, it had been after the first search when they had confiscated the Glock. So I don't think it's that illuminating that he didn't have the Glock on that Chicago trip. But
so he couldn't have had the Glock on that Chicago trip.
No.
But if we're using the fortress theory, how would we be able to use the heroin distribution when he doesn't actually even have the Glock?
Here's, I think, how you would do the fortress theory. Again, abundant evidence of drug trafficking, multiple different kinds. And we know it involved his house. And that is because during the Glock possession period, which was October 21st to November 20th, I think, that's what he pled to. Confidential informants were telling the police during that time period, if you look at the search warrant, which is in the record, it says, within the past month, we received information from a confidential informant that Mr. Pritchett is trafficking heroin or, you know, that he's bringing distribution quantities of heroin and fentanyl back from Chicago. So they're getting this information. They do a trash pull. In the trash pull, they find a baggie with heroin residue in it, which, of course, corroborates the confidential informant's tip that he was coming back with heroin. So we know he had it in the house. It was in the trash pull. And we know from both the confidential informant, which, by the way, Mr. Pritchett himself corroborated, because when they showed up on November 19th to search, they asked him, you know, hey, is it possible that you could have sold drugs to a confidential informant? And he said, well, maybe, you know, he kind of tried to extricate himself from that. But he did acknowledge that he delivered something to someone who could have been a confidential informant and that he suspected it may have been drugs. And, of course, we know from both the confidential informant's information and the fact that he was later coming back from Chicago with about 30 grams of heroin and fentanyl, that he had distribution quantities. So again, the trash pull links heroin to the house. We also know...
But it seems very attenuated. If you're looking at the language of 2K2.1 B6B, used or possessed any firearm in connection with another felony offense... The fact that he's a heroin dealer, accompanied by having a gun in his house, is that enough to trigger that enhancement?
I think it is when there's evidence that his house is being used in his distribution activities. And here I think it is.
But we don't know, apart from what is found the day that the gun is found, we don't know whether the gun was there when he was doing whatever distribution he was doing from that house. We don't have any idea about that, do we?
I suppose we don't know. You know, we didn't have someone in the house exactly when he had the heroin in the house. We know that heroin was found in the trash, and then the gun. I think actually the date of the trash pull where they found the heroin residue was November 18th, and then the search was the 19th. So I actually think that it's a reasonable inference to say that the gun was in the house while all that was happening. But it's not just the heroin either. Again, there was ecstasy, the ecstasy and meth pills. There's the meth residue in tin foils, which could just suggest meth use, but it suggests something involving meth. There were two digital scales in the house, one in his coat pocket, with the ecstasy pills, which, by the way, were broken into pieces. I take my opposing counsel's point that sometimes ecstasy is based on the quantity of pills, but these pills were broken into pieces, and the fact is they were found in a jacket with a digital scale.
So I'm sorry to be unknowledgeable about ecstasy? Is it taken in the form of pills? Is that how it comes and is taken?
So I asked these same questions in preparation for this argument because I'm actually not sure how it works. What I learned was, I think in ecstasy, I mean, you can just take it in pill form, or I think sometimes what I learned is you can crush it and do whatever. You know, you might be cutting it with a different substance to make it go further, extend your profits. And so in this case, in fact, there was a digital scale found in the kitchen with powder around it and a pill that the police report said looked like ecstasy. Now, I don't think that was tested. I don't know why. It could have been because it looked like cut, but he was clearly doing something in the kitchen with pills and powder and a digital scale.
How many doses of ecstasy were found in the coat jacket or the kitchen?
As far as I can tell, the record doesn't say an exact number of pills. I think the police report says several pills. I know the weight on it. It was 5-point-something grams.
Of ecstasy or of total drugs?
That was 5.17 grams of the ecstasy meth pills. They were tablets that contained MDMA and methamphetamine.
Because the question always in these cases is that a user amount or not?
Right. And there again, I think there was abundant evidence that he was trafficking ecstasy. And while I take my opposing...
Based on the text.
Yes, based on the texts.
So how do we... So I asked your friend on the other side, how are we supposed to assess evidence that predates the investigation at the home, the discovery of the drugs? You know, I can imagine 3 or 5 years being a long time before, but here we had a 6-month and then a 2-month. Do you have a test for us, or how are we supposed to evaluate that?
I don't have a bright line to propose. I do think that you can look at evidence from before the Glock possession period, because I think it sheds light on what they found in the search when they found the Glock, and they found in his pocket ecstasy pills and a digital scale. So that suggests, I mean, why does he have a digital scale if not for trafficking? And so the fact that he has these text messages that predate October, and of course, for all we know, he could have had the gun long before, but the cutoff date that he pled to is October 21st. So the text that predate that date, I think, shed light on what they found with the gun when they searched the house. I mean, it indicates that he's trafficking ecstasy. He said that he doesn't take, I mean, he said conflicting things about the ecstasy. He said on text message, I'm just the middleman, I don't take pills. I don't know what the difference is between good pills and bad pills, but I'm going to find out because I want repeat customers. So, and then, of course, he told police something different, which is that, oh, it's just personal use. But, of course, again, he has a digital scale. He has it in his coat pocket with the ecstasy.
The scale was in the pocket?
In one of the coats. In one pocket was the ecstasy pills, and in the other pocket was the digital scale. They were in the same coat, and then the Glock was in another.
How big are digital scales?
I don't know. I assume a digital scale. I think I've seen a picture. Actually, I think I saw the picture of the one in this case. I'm not sure if it's in the record or not, but, I mean, it's little. Apparently fits in a coat pocket. So in answer to your question, I think that the texts, while they predate the date when he admits in his plea agreement that he possessed the gun, I think they certainly shed light on what he was doing with that ecstasy, which they found in the same closet as the gun. And again, just to reiterate, just throughout the time periods, you know, before October 21st, during the time period when we know he possessed the gun, and then after that, there is abundant evidence of drug trafficking. And so in terms of the fortress theory, especially, again, when I say the drug trafficking is linked to the house because he's got digital scales, he's doing something preparing the drugs in there, we know that, and he likely had those big distribution quantities of heroin in there because the trash pull shows that the day before they find the gun. I just think this is a classic case of the fortress theory where he has a gun. Also, the gun was loaded. It was a semi-automatic gun. Those this court has held are both indications of drug distribution. And it was an illicit gun. He was a felon. He was not supposed to have it. it was stolen. And in fact, I mean, he made a big deal out of the fact that he wasn't supposed to have the gun. His girlfriend thought that he had the gun, but that he kept it in another apartment because he wasn't allowed to have it. So those are all indications of drug trafficking. And I think that is all I have, unless the court has further questions. I mean, I have organized in chronological order all of the different evidence of drug trafficking, if the court would like that.
And your basic position is that it doesn't matter whether he was trafficking in ecstasy or other drugs. Is that right?
I don't think it does. Ultimately, we focused on the ecstasy just because it was found so close together, and there is that nice commentary in the guideline that says when the other offense is drug trafficking, it's sufficient that the gun is found next to either drugs, drug manufacturing materials, or drug paraphernalia. Here, the gun was found next to ecstasy, which we know he was trafficking, and drug paraphernalia, which is the digital scale. So I think the ecstasy is an easy route to say that this enhancement was appropriate, but I don't think we need that either. I think given the abundant evidence that he was trafficking multiple different types of drugs throughout the relevant time period, and that this was his fortress, the drug trafficking involved the house, that is an alternative basis on which you could apply or uphold the enhancement.
Can you remind me, whose house was this?
I believe this was Pritchett's house. Pritchett and his girlfriend lived in it. I guess I would have to double check that, but there was no dispute that they were living there. And there was no dispute that the jackets were both Pritchett's. His girlfriend said that. He never disputed it. And, of course, in pleading to the felon in possession count, he acknowledged that he had possession of that Glock. If there are no further questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are a couple of things I wanted to point out, and I think the government keeps saying that Mr. Pritchett was trafficking in ecstasy. And I think all the record shows, again, is that perhaps he had been trafficking sometime in the past, that there's no evidence that at the time he possessed the gun that he actually was trafficking. The government also noted that these sales were linked to the house, but the government pointed out in its sentencing memo on page ID 617, and this was discussing the sale of presumably ecstasy, that that sale was set up in a, apparently Mr. Pritchett lived in a mobile home park, that sale was set up to be accomplished in a trailer six houses away. So it's unclear that he was actually trafficking out of the house in which he lived. And one of your questions, I think it was Judge Moore, you had asked, and again, it's my understanding in terms of people taking ecstasy that there are several ways. I think that these were pills. It did say that there were several compressed pills plus some powder, that there was another pill that was found that appeared to be the same, and that was weighed. And based on the overall weight of all of these pills and the powder, that I calculated there was perhaps eight or nine ecstasy pills, that was all that was found on there. But the pills, it's my understanding that people who take ecstasy take it by the pill. I think that they also can grind it up, destroy it, smash it, and inhale it, snort the pill, snort the ecstasy, and also smoke it. And that was what the officer who searched the house indicated, that contemporaneously with the finding of these pills, that there was evidence that they were smoking ecstasy in the house. And again, would point out that one thing that I assume it's just, I don't want to raise any complaints about it necessarily, but looking through the exhibits that the government filed, that they're not necessarily in chronological order, that on page ID 636 was a picture that was sent by Mr. Pritchett with two pistols. And 633 was text messages that went back and forth between Mr. Pritchett and someone else talking about selling a gun, and they said that they wanted a Glock. And it's my understanding that both of those pistols in those pictures were Glocks. One was black, one was pink. And so it's not clear cut that he held on to one and he just wanted to sell the other. He was attempting to sell both guns or either guns. He sold one at that time, but there's no indication that that this was anything more than, I guess you'd say, an investment trying to sell that. But again, as far as the confidential informant is concerned, that there were discussions that he was selling drugs, but again, that all predated the time when he possessed the gun or postdated that. And I still would say that if someone is going into Chicago in a not very nice section of Chicago to buy drugs, that if you were concerned about that, that's the time that you would be armed. And he was not armed then, that possession of the gun the other time, there's no showing that it actually facilitated any sort of drug transaction or drug trafficking. So we would ask the court to vacate this sentence, to remand for resentencing without this four-level enhancement. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your argument, and the case will be submitted, and the clerk may adjourn court.
Honorable court is now adjourned.